Kim was out, yes.
Yeah, they both said that they were going to be out.
Mayor, will you go ahead?
Yes.
I got the Ed Clark.
Do a first and final reading on that.
He is trapped on I-90 with car trouble.
Funding for nonprofits or something like that.
He said he was waiting for a tow truck last night.
Tow truck came up, yeah. He's not going to hear it.
To remind myself, I had a roof replaced on my house a few years ago. Watch these guys on.
Are you ready, Liz?
It was just incredible. It didn't matter what angle or anything like that.
Good evening, and thank you for coming to our Monroe City Council meeting. Tonight is our regular business meeting for Tuesday, July 8th. The time now is 7 p.m. And Liz, could you call the roll, please?
Certainly. Council members present and establishing a quorum are Hanford, Cuddeback, Rasmussen, Camp, and Gearing.
Thank you. And I did receive word that Councilmember Davis is probably not going to make it tonight. He's having car troubles. And that Councilmember Gamble had said that he was not expecting to be here tonight. So they're both excused absences. Councilmember Hanford, will you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Yes, please rise.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. And before we get started, I am going to note for the record right now that the two executive sessions are being pulled from the agenda, so those will not be heard tonight. Also, under unfinished business, AB 14094, approval of ordinance number 008-2014, adopting permanent sign code regulations, first reading is being removed from the agenda as well. That'll come back to us next week, and then the 22nd as well. Does any council members have any questions? Have any? Okay. Seeing none, we're going to go ahead and move on to presentations, and I'm pleased to introduce Representative Elizabeth Scott here to give a presentation. Thank you.
Thank you for having me, Mayor Thomas, and members of the council. Thanks for bringing me here today to share my thoughts on the 2014 legislative session and the upcoming session next January and the local issues here in Monroe. As you know, I was elected in 2012 on a platform of smaller, smarter government and focused on jobs, schools, and fiscal responsibility. So to keep those promises, I serve on three committees, higher ed, early learning and human services, and capital budget. I sponsored two bills that passed unanimously. All the Democrats, all the Republicans, the House and Senate voted yes. And both these bills are signed into law by the governor without vetoing a point. And I co-sponsored many others that also made it into law. My constituents from here in Monroe all the way up to Cedar, Willie, and Concrete asked me to not only work across the aisle for common sense solutions, which is a lot of fun, but also to vote no on government growth, additional bureaucracy, and unfunded mandates. I knew this part was going to be interesting when, during the third week, a Democrat crossed the aisle to come over to my desk on the House floor and said, "Hey, Elizabeth, I can get someone to come over and fix that button for you if you like. It seems to be stuck on no." Let's talk about jobs first. Along with jobs comes taxes. So you might remember that in 2012, the same year I was running, 72% in our district, the 39th, voted for the two-thirds majority initiative. And so I took that message down with me to Olympia as a clear mandate for no new taxes. It's not that our neighbors are against taxes. They just want people to be in firm agreement in the legislature, two-thirds in the House and two-thirds in the Senate, agreeing before raising taxes. The House did pass a bill for $890 million in an increase on small business tax, a B&O tax, but the Senate stopped it. We also worked to stop a 10 to 12 cent gas tax increase, and in a teletown hall that Representative Christensen and I did in the 39th year, 72% again expressed that they were not able to cope with the idea of a 10 to 12 cent extra per gallon on gas. As you know, our district is highly filled with commuters who drive a long way, rush hour and gold bars around 4:30 or 5 in the morning. There, in fact, in all, there was a total of $3 billion in new taxes that was passed by the House but stopped in the Senate. Even so, the legislature still increased its overall spending by $2 billion to a grand total of overall state spending of over $80 billion for the biennium, the two-year budget for 2013 to 2014. So just to give you a mental picture of what that looks like, I'd like my two assistants to come up, and these are local Monroe soon-to-be voters. So the bottom line, the purple line, shows population and inflation growth. We often hear, well, we need more taxes, we need to increase spending because of population growth and inflation, but that's the purple line. The red line shows the overall state spending, overall state revenue. And you can see the widening gap here between the red line and the purple line, and that represents a heavier and heavier burden on you and on our neighbors. That's why people are having less money to spend at the local gift shops, the local mom and pop stores, the Ben Franklin's around our district, and movie theater and the restaurants, because they've had to tighten their belts to make up for this heavier and heavier burden of government. So this chart actually is a little bit out of date. It ends with the 2010 supplemental budget at $72.7 billion. We are now at $80 billion, which would be up here. That is double what it was 14 years ago. Thanks. Good job. So, another way to help jobs come back to our community, and by the way, our state is number 29 in recovering from the economic recession. 28 states are doing better than we are at recovering and getting jobs back to their communities. So there are a number of states that have unemployment at 5% or even 3%. Ours is officially 6.3%, but our friends and neighbors know it's higher because we all know a lot of people out of work are looking for more work. It's probably more like between 13% and 16% for that total number of people who are out of work or looking for more. So regulations are a big piece of that, about why our state is having a tougher time recovering. Regulations are good for setting limits. I mean, we all want clean air and clean water. Basically, the modern-day manifestation of common law. The common law, for example, simply said if water doesn't leave your property as clean as when it came onto it, your neighbor downstream has the right to fine you, which makes sense to all of us. But regulations can get out of hand with agencies having rulemaking authority and no legislative oversight or direct accountability to the people. I mean, what do you do when they get out of control? You can't fire them. They've been appointed by the governor, the heads of those agencies. So, for example, while I was doorbelling on Highway 530 just outside of Monroe here in 2012, a small business owner told me that he was frustrated because he wanted to expand and was ready to add on to his building, but regulations for expanding the building convinced him not to. And he said, "I'm being punished for interrupting the rain on its way to the ground." What a shame to have regulations so stifling. A complaint that I heard all around the district as I doorbelled in 2012 was from owners of small daycares. This one totally surprised me. You never read about this one in the paper, but it was the number one complaint. The cost of BART for their backyard playgrounds. Different rules they had than for the larger daycares hosted on school grounds. The changing requirements for the height of a fence around a yard. The rule that they had to put their shampoo and soap into a locked cabinet. The rule for the children to wash their hands before switching from playing with blocks to playing with stuffed animals and back again. These regulations are driving them crazy and driving small daycares out of business. One man said as we chatted over the front fence, "It's as if there's people sitting down there in a room all day in Olympia thinking up more and more regulations. Don't they realize that each one costs me more money and makes it harder for me to keep the doors open?" The worst complaints show the results of an attitude of arrogance for some people in our agencies. A few months ago, the Department of Early Learning Deputy Director said in the Early Learning Committee, which I'm on, she said, "We here at the Department of Early Learning see ourselves as custodians of all the children of Washington, and the family daycares help us reach that goal." Government is the custodian of all our kids? She said that in the committee hearing, and it's on the TVW archives. This is not to say that everyone in that agency thinks that way. I'm sure they don't. But it's particularly concerning when this attitude emanates from the top. So one complaint I heard repeatedly was that sometimes a rogue Department of Early Learning licensor would go to a daycare and say, I'm going to revoke your daycare license if you don't move that door over 6 inches or that window up 4 inches. And then after the daycare owners had done an expensive remodel to restructure the home, she would come back 2 years later and say the same thing. So I proposed a bill to curb that authority a little bit. The bill says the Department of Early Learning can only require a structural alteration to a daycare facility after getting written approval from a local code enforcement official that the change is actually necessary for the safety of the kids or the staff. That bill passed unanimously and was signed into law this spring. Another agency that's showing an attitude problem is the Department of Ecology. In fact, a story just broke yesterday from Freedom Foundation. A man named Bob Penhale wrote, I will offer that we must find joy in the hunt and that the crafty old bucks are the most satisfying to harvest. But guess what? He wasn't talking about game. He was talking about property owners. Can you believe that? He was sending that email to Colin Maycock, who's a San Juan County planner, who immediately objected to the reference. When he replied, I would like to stress that the San Juan County staff are not and have never been interested in hunting the citizens and rather resent the implication that we target individuals for code enforcement actions. But again, this email shows the problem, doesn't it? The attitude problem. And to fix that, we should require that regulations be run past the legislature for approval before implementation. That's how it happens in most states. But because legislators are directly accountable to the people and can be fired in just 2 years if you're in the House or four if you're in the Senate. But agency heads are appointed by the governor and they might be there a long time. The people have no recourse against out of control power like that. So, how am I doing on time? Five left?
Yeah, seven, yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about schools. So, my background is in education. You probably know I have a master's degree in teaching English as a foreign language, and I taught college ESL, English as a second language, for 10 years here and overseas. 2 years in China, starting right after the Tiananmen massacre, which is why I became fiercely staunch defender of our constitutional rights, because I had none for 2 years while I was there, between 89 and 91. And then I also taught in the Middle East, so I've lived under hard tyranny, I've lived under soft tyranny. In the Middle East, I was in the United Arab Emirates in the Persian Gulf, and that was another very interesting experience, teaching Emirati women. They have separate women's campus and men's campus, and of course I was on the women's campus. But anyway, it was education that prompted me to want to run for office. In the first place, I was concerned about the high dropout rate around our state. Right now, we have about 78% graduating from high school in 4 years, and the sad thing is that, you know, so that's a close to one out of four dropping out, and then of the ones who do finish and go on to community college, over half of them find that they have to take remedial math or English or both. In fact, the Central Washington University lobbyists said in committee just this spring that 60% of their applicants had, or not, sorry, not applicants, the people admitted, had to take remedial math. 60% of their admitted students. So we've clearly got some work to do. The House Republicans for a long time have had this goal of funding education first. That is, let's put the money towards education, do what we want with education, and then the money that's left, we'll allocate that to the different departments and other goals of the core constitutional priorities, public safety, transportation, all of that. And frankly, the Supreme Court finally agreed with that and said, you know what, you need to make this a priority. It does say right there in our state constitution that education is of paramount importance, so let's put our money where our mouth is. The McCleary decision also called for reform. It did say it's not enough to simply throw more money at the problem. And it also reminded the legislature that they are the ones who write the definition of what is included in basic education. And that definition has expanded over the last 10 to 14 years, pretty much mirroring this chart. We did add $1 billion last year to education, and we added a little bit more this year. But as you know, the budgets are usually done on the odd numbered years, and so any huge changes, the next huge change will come next year. But the House Republicans already laid out a plan for how to do everything that the McCleary decision requires financially by 2018, and has already we've already taken some big steps towards that. So, for example, one of the things they said was we want to fund kindergarten through third grade smaller classes, because we know that that's where it really makes a difference, is in those early years. And I know that as a teacher. I mean, this is a fact. It's not just some talking point. And so in order to do that, we started with the poorest, most challenged schools. We did a third of them, and we'll be continuing that until all the kindergarten through third grade classes in the state by 2018 have a reduced class size. This year, we also awarded more funding towards ECAP, preschool, for the most challenged kids. And Snohomish County actually got 141 new slots for ECAP, plus they're converting 54 of those slots from part-time to full-time. And there was an attempt, let's move towards talking about what's coming down the pipe. There was an attempt this year to make preschool included in the definition of basic education. But again, that would be another enormous expense, and nobody could really quite figure out how to get around that hurdle. We simply don't have the money for that at this time. And there was some opposition towards mandating preschool for all. Now, as far as testing concerns, that's another area that has been increasingly expensive. You know, some of it is just jumping through the hoops that the federal government sets up for us, and a lot of us would like to see control return to the state level, and then a lot of that control pushed down to the local level, to the school boards and the household level, the parents, to make the decisions. But what happened this time is that the funding is again an issue, and so we're not sure how we could get through all that. So as far as the testing, we've increased spending on Common Core, on No Child Left Behind, started with Goals 2000, and it's just kind of, you know, keeps going on. And yet the test scores, although sometimes they show a small improvement, if you go on the National Assessment for Educational Progress website, NAEP, and look at the test scores from 1971, you can see they're relatively flat. So we're pouring billions across the country, billions of dollars into this, trillions actually, and with not much to show for it. So a lot of people are ready to kind of start thinking outside the box. I think one thing we'll see next year is growing opposition to Common Core. It's bubbling up on both sides of the aisle, which is really interesting. There's a website about stopping Common Core online. Let's see, it's Washington State Against Common Core State Standards. It's a Facebook group, and they also have a web page. And on the Facebook group, it's interesting because they sent out a questionnaire to all the legislative candidates and those running for re-election and asked, where do you stand on, you know, certain education questions, including Common Core? And it's really interesting to see the people's answers. Mike Sells is vehemently opposed to Common Core and additionally testing. So this is not a partisan issue by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, on one side, the Washington State Republican Party added to their platform, not to their platform, but they passed a resolution saying we oppose Common Core state standards. And interestingly, in downtown Seattle, which you would think would be the absolute opposite of the WSRP, the downtown Seattle, a Democrat legislative district group of PCOs met, and they passed the same resolution saying we oppose Common Core. So it might be for slightly different reasons. One side is afraid of too much government control and data mining and, you know, loss of privacy and all that, but then you've got this other side that says we don't see that testing is making that much difference, and what we want is for the teachers to have as much flexibility and creativity in the classroom as possible so they can meet the individual students' needs. And so there's this interesting crossover between those ends of the spectrum. So I think that'll be kind of interesting to watch next year. And I guess we'll stop there for questions, because I'm sure you've got some.
Thank you very much, Representative Scott. Councilmember Garing.
Great, thanks. Thanks for being here.
Sure.
I appreciate you serving us in Olympia. Maybe some of the highlights of the things you look forward to personally you're going to be working on in the next session.
Yes, so I did bring up a bill this year that gained 3 Democrat co-sponsors and 9 Republican co-sponsors. And that one was for student data privacy. Even though it gained a lot of momentum and it did get a very well-attended hearing, it was very interesting. In the Education Committee, it was stopped and never brought to a vote in the Education Committee.
I am already working with those Democrat co-sponsors to bring that bill back. So I'll be pre-filing it in December, and we'll go from there. But basically, I was asking three questions in the bill. Number one, what data is being collected on our students? And I'm not talking about just academic data. I don't know if you realize, but there are scores and scores and scores, perhaps hundreds of data points. It's difficult. I haven't been able to find out exactly how many data points, but I've seen the manual for inputting some of the data on our students. It includes things like homelessness, which, by the way, now includes people who are sleeping on a couch or living with grandma and grandpa or even living in a trailer. So, frankly, my son and I would have qualified for homeless by that definition a couple of times. It includes if you're handicapped at all. It includes if you're a foster child. So there's all kinds of things that are non-academic that are being collected, and there were over 100 bills this year introduced in the legislature that have the word database in them. So there's this real mentality in the House. I don't know if it's the same in the Senate, but in the House, there's this real mentality that more data must be better, and so they just want to collect as much as possible. But I don't know if how many of you saw the story last December. KUOW broke the story, NPR, that Seattle Times had reached an agreement with Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction to get access to the P20 database, which has all this information in it. It used to be K-12, then they started talking about P-16, and now they talk about P-20, and the P doesn't even mean preschool anymore. It means prenatal, because if your child is diagnosed with amniocentesis that something's wrong, boom, he's got a label on him and he's in the system and they're already starting to track him. So this longitudinal database, which was incentivized by the federal government, and every state has one now, but ours is one of the most extensive, this longitudinal database collects all this information, and the information is put in once a month, and Seattle Times got permission from OSPI to have access to this database from 2009 on, saying that they were going to do research on them. And when KUOW asked OSPI, why did you allow this for Seattle Times, they said, well, we consider Seattle Times to be a research organization. You might think, wait a minute, I thought we had student privacy laws, FERPA laws. Well, yes, but in 2011, the federal government, it actually wasn't Congress, it was Department of Education, changed the FERPA laws and widened them so big you can drive a truck through them now. So you can share data with private companies, Bloomberg, you name it. And so that is behind some of the concern about Common Core as well. So my question in the bill is, what data is being collected on our students? Who's it being shared with? And shouldn't parents and students be notified about that sharing of data, and in some cases need to give consent before that data is shared? Because again, how do you know what data is in that database, and how do you correct it if there's a mistake, right? I mean, it's in there forever. And of course, we all know if Verizon can have a data breach or Target, I mean, do we really think OSPI's security is tougher and tighter? I don't think so. I think that's a real issue. So that is another issue that I am working on and that we'll bring up.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Councilmember Hanford.
Yeah, I don't have a question, but I just want to thank you for serving. And
thank you.
We appreciate you representing us down there.
It's an honor. And it's mostly fun.
Any other questions? Representative Scott, thank you very much for coming.
Thanks very
this
much.
Evening.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you for your service.
And thank your assistance as well.
Okay, the next item that we have on the agenda is comments from citizens. This is a time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. We do have a sign-up list. Did anybody sign in?
Point of order, the public hearing is actually listed prior to comments.
Yeah, let's have the public hearing. Yeah. So with that said, we're going to go ahead and we're going to do the public hearing. This is why I usually mark off each one as we go through it. So public hearing, first one on there and the only one on there is AB 14093. This is overweight parking permits. And Brad, I think you've got this one, yes?
Thank you.
Section 1024040 of the Monroe Municipal Code generally prohibits the operation of vehicles weighing more than 12,500 pounds from operating on city streets not designated as school bus. However, it does provide for the issuance of local weight, is what it's called, their parking permits, that will allow someone who owns or operates a vehicle in excess of 12,500 pounds to drive from a truck route to their residence and park it overnight. Either park it on the street in front of their house or on their house's property. That was first passed and last amended in 1978, and the character of the city of Monroe has changed substantially since then. And also recently, we've been having some difficulties with neighbors sitting along with people with large trucks in their house or on their property, and the misunderstanding of what that actually allows people to do when they have a parking permit, and some people thinking that that allows them to operate commercial truck repair enterprises and trucking companies out of their houses, which, at least in my opinion, is not the intent of that ordinance. So I thought it was time to have this reviewed by the City Council to see if any action needed to be taken regarding this. Some of the ideas that could be done is to opening the public hearing and any discussion the council may have is to leave the current code section as it is. Limit the issuance of permits to a certain number per year. Limit the issuance of permits to certain zoning districts or areas of the city. Or no longer allow parking of vehicles weighing more than 12,500 pounds either on the street or just on the owner's property altogether. And you folks, after discussion, may think of other options. Currently, there's only one permit that's issued, and there are three permits that were issued in 2013. We saw a large spike during the recession, which I assume was due to people being entrepreneurial and doing, you know, working for themselves, in which case they need a different place to park their vehicles. In the past, there have been issues regarding the idling of permitted vehicles for long periods of time in the morning, and also use of parking permits to justify the operation of a trucking operation in a residentially zoned area. I think that's all I have. And if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Okay, does anybody have any questions? Okay, seeing none, we'll go ahead and...
Does that include the public?
It's coming right now.
That's coming up next.
Thank you.
Okay. Do any council members have any questions? Okay. We're now going to go ahead and open up the public hearing. Do we have anybody who's listed? Okay. Did you want to speak during the public hearing or public comment?
Whenever you would like to make public comment.
Public comment it is. Okay. So we do not have anybody listed for the public hearing. Are there any members of the public that would like to come forward and speak on the proposed ordinance? This would be a time for you to come up.
Yeah, I'd like to ask a question.
Please come up and state your name and address for the record.
I'm Greg McPherson. I live at 15414 170th Avenue in Monroe. Brad, I just wanted to know, could we get a clarification of what the weight limit that was specified? There was that 10,000 pounds?
12,500.
Can you please clarify for me, the average guy who doesn't really work with trucks at all, where does 12,500 pounds, you know, what's a semi, what's a dump truck, what's a truck and transfer, what's my pickup? I don't really know. So I just wanted to ask some clarification to understand what the ordinance would actually affect.
Pretty much is around a UPS truck.
Okay, so a UPS truck, so a loaded UPS truck, like a loaded?
It's well supposed to be overweight, so.
Okay, so an empty one. And then anything above that, which would obviously include things like the dump trucks and all the construction stuff that's on the roads right now, because obviously we have a lot of construction going on in the area. So the impact of the ordinance on those trucks would be to prohibit them from parking within city limits?
Well, there is no ordinance proposed. This is just taking comment on what should be done regarding that. There's no proposal. They're currently in operation.
Yeah. Quite honestly, I think that the additional cost to the roads for the city definitely merits the consideration of prohibiting or at least restricting those trucks from going anywhere they want to in the city. Now, I do understand that there's the current Envision Monroe effort going on, and I know that's a long-term effort. So perhaps this discussion could be factored into that discussion. So that, because trucks aren't going to stop coming through the city, there's going to continue to be commerce in the city, obviously with the increased growth. So maybe this is something to refer to Paul and the planning people with regards to how we accommodate the transport going through the city while at the same time minimizing the impact on the cost to us, the citizens, the annoyance, and the other points that were mentioned. That's all I have to say. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to come forward and comment on the matter? Chief Quinzer.
Let's give my address.
You
818 work. West Main Street, Monroe. Tim Quinzer. As the one of the signers on these permits, first of all, I kind of address the comment that the gentleman just made that I have a duly pickup and it's licensed for 12,000 pounds, so I'm 500 pounds under the limit. So it could get what we consider fairly small if you're just looking at weight limits. But my biggest concern is, and the issues that we've had in the last 3 years on permits for overweight vehicles is not the weight, but it's the size of them and where they're parked. We've had some of them, one that I recall, I believe it was up in the farm area, that was parked so that people had to go into the oncoming lane to get around it. It was parked right in front of the house. And so now, anytime there is a permit requested, we go out and look at the area where they're talking about some public, it's on a public street to make sure there's clearance for the traffic and light. A suggestion I would give on this, and instead of calling it overweight permits, come up with a different name, because I really doubt that we would encounter a overweight vehicle. We will encounter oversized vehicles. We will encounter vehicles that are parked in areas that are annoying to their neighbors. As was already mentioned, vehicles started at 5 o'clock in the morning, let idle and warm up, things like that. We also have truck routes within the city where commerce can travel as far as dump trucks, and also their trucks bringing goods to the stores within the city. And those are not in the residential areas. So.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public or staff that would like to come forward to speak on the issue? Okay, seeing none, Council, would you like to close the public hearing?
So move.
Second.
I have a first from Council Member Camp and a second from Council Member Cutterback. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes 5-0. Council Member Gehring.
Thanks. Brad, a couple questions about this. Is there like a current issue going on that brought this up? I haven't heard anybody complain about this before, or I certainly haven't seen too much of this myself, so I'm just trying to figure out, is this a big issue that we're facing?
It's not a big issue, but it has been taking a lot of time of the planning permitting department regarding the operation of a commercial trucking outfit in the residential area that started with the issuance of a overweight parking permit.
Okay. And you said there's one to three of those?
Well, there's one year. Issued right now.
Okay.
And then there's two or three last year. And then I didn't go back any further to look how many have been done previously. Okay. It's probably, the five area is probably about how many, get issued.
Okay. And that is simply is that to park it? So today as it is that to park, or is that just to drive up and down the street with
That's
it?
That's to park.
That's to park.
Yeah.
So if you have a 13,000-pound vehicle, you can still, we have construction vehicles coming right. through, so obviously we have heavier vehicles than that.
That's a different section of the code that talks about that you have to stay on the truck route
right.
unless you're making pickup and then use the shortest route possible to go from the truck route to your point of pickup.
Okay. And so today you have to get a permit to park a vehicle 12.5 or over on a residential street.
Correct.
Okay. And why would we want to change
adjacent
that?
Adjacent to your property.
It could be my next door neighbor, which would be an inconvenience to me.
Yeah. You can't,
but ultimately,
you can't park it anywhere except adjacent to where you live.
To where you live, right.
Yeah.
Okay. So that might be, there are some tight neighborhoods. I understand that. Are we, I guess I don't see the problem with what we have today currently. I guess that's my opinion. You know, having to get additional and more permits, I don't think that that's a great idea. If this was a something that was widespread across the city, then maybe I think we would entertain a change. At least in my opinion, I'd probably just leave it as it is. We're already getting money for a large vehicle to park adjacent to your property with a permit. Certainly love to hear other council members' thoughts. I see the lights on, so I'll leave it at that for now. I'd be in favor of just leaving it as it is, I think. Thanks.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Thank you. Brad, with a permit, I'm assuming it's for the business and not necessarily per vehicle or per vehicle?
For the vehicle.
For the vehicle itself, okay. And I know, I understand we've got one permit out there this year, three last year. Is that, I mean, just a handful of them over the last few years? I mean, is that, that's pretty normal? Or is, because it just seems like there's a lot more trucks out there parked and than the wooden permit. So
maybe that's the people who apply.
Sure.
You know, the enforcement's done by the police department.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah, over the course of a year, I've heard a couple comments about the overweight trucks and the parking, you know, and it's generally the neighbors of those trucks, and I think that, you know, Brad and other staff have kind of heard some of the same comments, which is why our P4 committee had this discussion a few weeks ago, just to look at it. And this permit was last revised in 1978, so, you know, timing seemed right to relook at this. You know, I had an interesting conversation with someone today that, well, he doesn't live here in the city. He does have some contacts within the city that have the trucks, and, you know, I just kind of flew it by him as to, you know, what would happen if someone, you know, if there was more restrictions on it, and kind of alluded to the fact that he'd have to park it off-site, or the people would have to park the trucks off-site, and it's less secure, and so forth, and it was just a different way of seeing that. So, I'm knowing the limited permits that are out there, I'm looking at this going, it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that these are out there, or the trucks are being fired up at 5 a.m. and disrupting the neighborhoods. But I'm okay with where this is at so far, until I hear some other feedback. So.
Very good. Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you. Couple things. For probably 2.5 years, at our entrance of our cul-de-sac where I live, there was a semi dump truck parked what seemed like all the time there, and it leaked oil all over the asphalt, and it created somewhat of a blind or harder to navigate corner, because you can't see around this huge thing. And so for me, it was definitely a nuisance. They've since moved, and it's been gone for quite a while, and it's very nice to have clear vision. So for me, I'm one of those that it was an irritant. The flip side of it, I have a good friend who has owned his own business where he has a dump truck parked up Chain Lake Road. It used to be just outside the city limits. Now it's just inside the city limits. And he's got a lot of property, and so he parks his dump truck on the property and you know, he's not ever a nuisance to anyone. Even if he idles it at 4 in the morning, he's in the middle. There's not, the nearest house is, you know, a couple acres away. So I see both sides of it. I don't, at this point, nothing's bothering me. The semi-truck's gone. And there's only one that's licensed right now. So I'm kind of along the same vein of not really seeing the urgency of doing anything. Love to hear, you know, from the chief as far as, like, is more enforcement even, like, an option or something to even consider or possible, because if we do more enforcement, we find that, hey, there's a lot more violators out there, you know, how will that affect things? And that's pretty much all I have to say on that. Thanks.
Chief, do you have anything to add?
No, all I would say is that you know, starting your truck at 4 o'clock in the morning is annoyance. It's not a safety issue. What we're concerned in the police department safety issues where the vision or the sight line is obscured by a large vehicle sitting at the crest of the hill. We have, before we started checking the locations, the exact location where they were parking them, we did come on a situation where we had given a permit that we actually revoked the permit. Because of the sideline, and that's what I was trying to get at. Where it's not the overweight issue that's causing. I think the problem is the size of the vehicle and the location where they're parking them, which is causing a safety issue. And that's for us. That's the issue. It's not weight. It's not 4 o'clock in the morning starting up or 5 o'clock. It's the safety issue.
And Chief, if I may ask, and then I'll get to Paul and then to Councilmember Camp, is it other sections of code or law that allow you to cite those vehicles that are parked in unsafe manners, or is it this section of code that allows you to cite them?
Well, it's really, it'd be a parking violation, and it's an improper parking violation, in which they're parked in the roadway, actually.
So it's not this section of code that you rely on. No, changing this would have no bearing on an oversized vehicle that is blocking the roadway so that people have to drive into the other lane to get around it.
If there would be an area added that would pertain to safely park as far as sight distance and the like, in this section, it would help us immensely.
Okay.
Because it would define it far better than a parking violation.
Okay.
And with that, we can deny it.
Okay. So one option on here could be to maybe not necessarily change the 12,500, or the other items on here, but could add something related to safe parking and sight distance triangles and road width. And Brad, do you have?
One thing, echo that, is the criteria section, if you read down there, it's very vague on what the criteria are to decide whether or not one needs to go in.
Okay.
So reading up what the criteria are would be much appreciated.
Okay. Thank you. Paul, and then we'll go to Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I just had a couple comments. Brad did refer to this issue we had this past year, and it's actually a continuing issue. One specific property that involved a number of trucks, and part of our problem was that the code does need some clarification at the very least, because there was an argument or a debatable point about how many trucks are we talking about, and what the real, what that entitles the property owner to. Staff spent, we worked with this over several months, spent countless number of hours dealing with this one particular issue, which involved not only complaints about noise and disruption and street degradation, but actually life safety issues with speeding trucks, problems with snagging wires, trucks going through school zone. We had probably 15 different complaints from different people all through the Freilands area. So I think there is some need to clarify the code, and you have the choice of whether it's restricted slightly more to help address a problem or restricted to an extreme point where it's simply not allowed, and that's certainly up to your consideration to figure that out. But I do think there need to be some attention given to updating it. My fear is that this problem will recur, and in most cases, unless someone complains, we don't know about it. And we don't, you know, we're not out there looking, hunting for problem cases. So unless somebody complains, then the neighbors will continue to put up with it, unless they do raise a voice. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Paul.
Thank you, Paul.
In the situation that you were talking about then with the vehicles driving around and snagging wires, that's not an issue of parking, that's an issue of haul routes, is that correct?
It was both parking at the subject property and the trucks going from, which are their permit allows, going from the truck route to the to the private property.
Private property, okay. Okay, thank you. Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I believe most of these points I was curious about have been made, but I'm just curious. So where was 12,500, how was it arrived at?
No record of how that number was arrived.
Okay, I just didn't know if it was some number. The reason I ask is from the you have a dually, so I'm assuming you're using it for hauling a big trailer, as most of my neighbors do when they have that size of truck. I've seen larger trucks for hauling apparently larger trailers, which makes me wonder about, is this a commercial versus a private issue? If someone is, you know, a private owner of a large truck that exceeds 12,500, they would be in violation or they would require the permit, correct?
Correct.
As opposed, so it'd be any truck, including a commercial truck. The examples I've been hearing sounds more like commercial trucks or an issue. Also, street versus non-street, if somebody's got something parked in their backyard, then I'll get to the idling thing here in a second. That sounds like it's less of an issue than if it's sitting on the street. I've been around the city where I've seen the big trucks parked on suburban streets. It's just impossible to get around. And the last point, again, this is idling. I own a classic car. When that thing's warming up in the morning, it probably sounds like a semi. So I can see a commercial truck causing an issue with that. If it's somebody's private vehicle, they're not going to be running as often as it would a commercial vehicle. Those are the points. To me, from what I've heard, it sounds like there's a street versus non-street issue, as pointed out. Line of sight, parking, issues like that, and just your neighborhood in general. If someone wants to have something on their back lot and they have sufficient property and it doesn't impact the neighbors to any great degree, I don't see having a restriction. I'm not sure. I guess they'd have to have a permit currently. Correct, Brad?
Correct.
Okay. I don't know if that's a hindrance to someone or a private owner, but those are my thoughts on it. Thank you.
Councilmember Cutterback.
Thank you. Brad, I see that one permit is issued currently. Did that one permit holder get notice that we were going to talk about this ordinance tonight?
Yes, the current permit holders from last year, people who have been rejected this year, public notice in the newspaper and on the website and a newsflash to 1,500 email addresses.
Wonderful. Any input? No comments? Okay.
No.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we're holding this public hearing anyways, because that was one of the concerns, was if this was somebody's livelihood, that they had a chance to come forward and at least speak on it. A couple things. I agree that it seems a street issue versus a property issue, and I'm inclined to agree that, you know, safety and line of sight and size might matter on the street, where if it's, you know, huge property and they can park it on there. So I think looking at that and hearing what the chief said about size, you know, being an issue, because I can see that being a safety concern when it's parked on the street. So I agree, looking at the ordinance and looking at a way to kind of beef that up. And if I'm, you know, not knowing where the 12,500 pounds came into play, you know, I think looking at the oversized issue and the safety issue more than the pound size makes sense to me. And one thing I do believe, though, is I believe that the residential area, you know, it's for residents, and we have to just be aware of that as we're looking at this ordinance and looking at safety on the streets. But I would be more inclined to look at the ordinance, possibly beef it up as far as the size and line of sight, and worried more about on the street than versus on the property. Thank you.
Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. Appreciate everybody's comments. Is this something that the Planning Commission, if we're going to be getting into things that deal with people's property and you know, where things can go, is this something that would need to be sent through there for some further discussion? I'm not interested in further regulations. I think we are talking about people's livelihoods, and the sound of trucks can be annoying, but it's also the sound of people, you know, with jobs, and that's a good thing. From that standpoint, I guess I'd be curious what constitutes, you know, rejecting a permit as well. And is 12,500 pounds too light? You know, so if we're going to focus on size, you know, maybe getting weight out there is better. If we're really going to talk about size, if that really is the safety issue, people live in residential neighborhoods. I don't want to burden them further or inconvenience people. You know, if there is a large truck that they, you know, they have to park it outside the city limits, I think that would be very unfortunate. And while I don't think we're talking about going to something that extreme, we do want to be a business-friendly place. We also want to be a residential-friendly place. And I think we want to be careful before we just make sure we take the time to think of the unintended consequences of making a change. Certainly want to address safety concerns, but again, I personally haven't seen a lot of this. I personally haven't seen a lot of, heard a lot about it. I appreciate that others have. I personally haven't. It can be inconvenient, but I think ultimately, you know, there needs to be a balance between, I mean, people have livelihoods, people have jobs, some of that requires big trucks. I wouldn't want to have to park a mile away from my house. You know, but then I also want to be considerate to my neighbors. So as long as there's a balance there that takes into consideration both with any proposed changes that we're going to make, then I'll be okay. But on its face, I don't have a problem leaving it the way it is. Thank you.
Okay. Unless council objects, we will proceed to rewrite the code with a focus on street safety. Did you want to make a motion?
Well, I was just wondering if we have to close the public hearing first.
Oh, yeah.
So I would like to move that we close the public hearing.
Second.
Okay, I have a first from Councilmember Camp. I have a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
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 All opposed? Motion passes. Okay. So
yes.
With that said, thank you. With all that said, then, it sounds as if there would be a consensus, and therefore we would go ahead and put together an ordinance that would revise the section of code to focus on street safety in a broad sense. I'll go back and talk to Paul a little bit more about what he was talking about with the number of trucks on the property, because that isn't quite something associated with the 12,500 pounds and might get more to home occupations and businesses and things like that. Councilmember Kent.
Thank you. Paul, this property with multiple trucks, was this a commercial enterprise?
Yes, it was.
Okay, so we might want to look at business applications. I'm just guessing, if they're in a residential area, I don't know if there's zoning issues which would concern or be impacted here?
It's kind of a unique case.
Okay, and that's...
But it was a commercial trucking business with a multitude of trucks and other equipment and the resulting neighborhood right. larger area issues that brought about.
So in light of what Councilmember Gehring said, we want to encourage businesses, but we don't want to encourage large trucking outfits sitting next to large residential areas. So that might be something you want to look at as well.
Okay. What we finally came to on that issue was their ability to park one vehicle, one truck, and no other trucks or other equipment.
Thank you.
And in some instances like that, to Councilmember Gehring's point, would fall more, I think, with the Planning Commission, because at that point you're talking about something blowing up over there. So at some point you're talking about land uses, and so that would be something that I think would be more applicable for the Planning Commission. But it sounds as if there were codes that probably related to what was going on there that you were able to use. Is that what I understand?
Well, for this code revision,
No. For the situation where you had multiple vehicles and equipment, you were able to use planning section of code to, like planning zoning, to resolve that issue?
Partly zoning and partly the section we're talking about tonight.
Okay. And I think the proposal right now is just to look at this section of code rather than looking at planning and zoning. Okay, and I see nods from council members. Okay, so we'll focus on street safety and size of vehicles. We'll look a little bit into the commercial versus personal, and a little bit less concern about parking on your property versus more concern on parking on public street. Mm-hmm. Seeing head nods, we'll go ahead and we will work on that, and I don't have a time estimate on that. So unless council has a driving due date, we'll work on that and have that back. Yes? It on the extended agenda? Okay. So we'll see how things are going. We'll keep it where it is on the extended agenda for right now, but if necessary, we'll bump that and update you if we do. Okay. Any other item? Any other discussion on this matter? Okay. We're going to go ahead.
Thank you, Brad.
Yep. Thank you, Brad. We're now going to move on to comments from citizens, and again, this is the time set aside for members of the audience to speak to the City Council on any issue related to the City of Monroe, except any quasi-judicial matter subject to a public hearing. You have a sign-in sheet. Una, work up.
Hi, I'm Una. I'm housed at 125 South Lewis Street. We'll be steering today. I was last here maybe a few weeks ago, and we were talking about a bunch of stuff with the chamber and collaboration with the city and various other people are doing in town, and I'm coming here this evening just to give you a heads up as something that could be expedited. If any of you have already looked at the Monitor, it kind of prefaced me coming tonight because there's already an article in the Monitor, so anything I don't enlighten you with, you're more than happy to pick one up or go online and get more information. So I touched upon the smokestack and moving forward with possibly painting that structure. So we've moved to a point now where we have four designs. I wanted to bring those designs with me tonight so I could show you. However, the woman that we've reached out to, her name is Esther McClatchy. She's the same woman that designed the smokestack in Mount Vernon. She's helping us. She's having some family issues right now. So she is going to be taking our images that we have in our head and putting them on paper so that you have an understanding and so that the general public has an understanding, but that has not happened yet. I anticipate it happening very soon, and if you would like me to describe them to you, I would be more than happy to do so, but it won't do them justice. But with that said, we need to get paint, and I'm working with that opportunity. Sherwin-Williams is being generous. I'm looking forward to hearing back from them later this week. We need to get a structure that can boost an individual 150 feet in the air. Mm-hmm. I have found that this is a rather interesting question because that isn't a norm. There are structures that go 135 feet in the air and things that go 185 feet in the air, but nothing in between. I think that's odd. And the 185-foot structure is a new entity, and there is one in the state, and it happens to be in Everett. So I have a tentative reservation for that entity. But it's going to depend on everything else if we can have it fall in line for our time period. We also have to raise quite a bit of funding to get all of this taken care of in an expedited manner. I'm working on that as well. So there are four items that are going to be up for public approval or disapproval or thumbs up or however you want to look at it. They will be posted in the newspaper. They'll be on our website. They'll be for you to put your thumbs up or thumbs down on and public comment. And then whichever one is chosen after X amount of time, we will then put it to our painter and Esther to devise the best way to go about doing it and have it done. It'll probably take about a week in total once we get to that point. The city has been very generous in allowing potentially the use of a pressure washer. Not really sure how that works with the height. Brad is working with me on those logistics. He's much more engineer savvy than I am. I don't understand why we just can't strap on some, you know, climbing mechanisms for your feet and just come on up like you would a tree. But I guess that doesn't work. So so we'll have to clean it first. Of course, in that cleaning process, we'll make sure it's structurally sound. The owner is continuing to be cheerleading this event and seems to be very excited about it. We've reached out to Grocery Outlet and a number of other entities that are within that plaza, and they seem to be very excited. And so with that, we are moving forward, and my timeline is to have it all completed by the parade, because I don't think anything sense. So that's it. Do you have any questions before I have a minute and 26 seconds left? Go ahead. Shoot.
Are there any questions? This is a big issue, and we usually don't ask questions during public comment. But
wow.
I'm afraid that phone's going to go off again. So. It's going to explode. Thank you very much for cheerleading this, for spearheading it. Thank you for the invite and for going down to meet with Mr. Wolfstone. We had a really good meeting with him about three weeks ago. He seemed to be very interested in the proposal, seemed to be very interested in Monroe, and I appreciated the conversation, the time that we had with him. So please keep us posted.
Absolutely.
And do you have anything else?
I'm good right now. My minutes are up.
Yeah, but we're talking. So.
I can go on and on. There's lots of stuff going on, okay. But I won't bore you with that now. I think I'm scheduled in most of that. Yeah.
Okay.
So you'll give me this. And I'll take
very
a full
much.
20 minutes, maybe push that up to 30. We'll see.
Push that to 30. All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other members of the public that would like to come up and talk? Any other members of the public? All right. We're going to go on to our consent agenda now. Council? Councilmember Rasmussen?
Motion to approve consent agenda.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Rasmussen, a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. The next item we have is new business. This is AB 14095. Authorize the Mayor Pro Tem to sign an interlocal agreement with Snohomish County for the Snohomish Regional Drug and Gang Task Force. I would ask the city clerk note my recusal in the official minutes for the meeting. The reason for my recusal is that I am employed by the contracting party, Snohomish County. My position with the county is that of employee, and my compensation consists entirely of fixed salary. There is no contingent component of my compensation package pursuant to RCW 4223040, and based upon my consultation with the attorney, I am accordingly at most having a remote interest in the agreement and am removing myself from participation in this matter. So.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you.
Please note the mayor stepped out. Council, discussion or motions? Raise your hand. I can't see the red buttons. Councilmember Garen.
Thanks. I authorized the Mayor Pro Tem to sign an interlocal agreement with Snohomish County establishing the Snohomish Regional Drug and Gang Task Force. Expressly authorize further minor revisions to the agreement as deemed necessary or appropriate, and for the City of Monroe to formalize police participation in task force-related services.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Gearing and a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Ayes have it, 5-0. Someone want to let the mayor know?
I'll let him sit out there.
We have a motion from Councilman.
Thank you.
Should have made the chief talk a little bit.
Okay. The next item that we have on our agenda is council member reports. Councilmember Gehring.
Thank you. Love the 4th of July in Monroe. Mm-hmm. Love that we have fireworks here. I know not everybody's a huge fan, but it is one of the things that makes our town unique. We had a blast. Always is has been a joy in every neighborhood that we've gotten to be in. We're in our new neighborhood this year, and it was very lively, I'll say, on our street, and we had a great time. Also have a really great street too, because everybody takes breaks and cleans up like halfway before they light up more, and then they clean up. So I think our entire street, maybe except for one house, was completely cleaned by midnight. And then first thing in the morning, that house was out there cleaning it up. So our street looks pretty good. I wish that all streets did that. I know not everybody does, but I like that sense of community, and hopefully, you know, people recognize that, you know, it's not a fundamental right to have fireworks, but it is allowed here. And I certainly would encourage people to be a good neighbor, clean up after yourself when you do it, be safe, but always clean up after yourself, and it just makes it more fun for everybody, and the place doesn't look like trash afterwards. So anyway, really enjoyed it, had a blast, and I hope other people did too. Thank you.
Councilmember Camp.
Thank you. I just want to echo Councilmember Gehring's statement. It was just a wonderful 4th. Hope everybody enjoyed it.
Councilmember Rasmussen.
Nothing tonight.
Councilmember Cutterback.
Same for the 4th. The farm. You don't have to leave your house. Have to leave your front lawn. So lots of fireworks. It was great. And then attended Betsy Lewis's retirement party at the library. Councilmember Gehring was there, and nice turnout. I think it was the Monday before, not yesterday, but last Monday. And she's had a huge impact on our community, a huge impact on this library, helped open and build this library, and then helped pass a very successful levy during a recession. And she's been involved in so many different committees throughout the community. I've served with her on quite a few. So it'll be a big loss, but hopefully we get somebody in a library position that will fill her shoes. And then just a comment for Brad, the roundabout up there, I really like the rocks in the middle with the flag, so I'm hoping those rocks are going to stay.
Rocks are staying, flags not.
Flag's not going to stay?
What's
that? Oh, you can't have a flag there?
You can bring forth the resolution, and you'll probably have lots of support to get that.
I think it looks great up there, and I think I can see it with the grass and the rocks, and if we had a flag and some flowers. I mean, that to me is a nice kind of opening or welcoming to that part of the town. So maybe a resolution will be coming forward, and we'll make it that you have to go put the flag up.
Yeah. Public
every
works
day.
Yeah. When you do your walk. So, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Walk up there.
You didn't think of all of that.
Yeah.
So, Councilmember Cutterback, I think a flag makes
sense. It looks great
not,
now.
Not
so.
Having seen it, I know that we've got a flag at the roundabout on Main Street. We've got a flag on Main Street. It would make sense to have a flag there. So I'll talk with staff a little bit more about what that means. So.
Well, it's one of the first things I noticed, and it looks, I mean, a few of you may drive by there
gateway
all the time.
Too.
It looks great. I mean, just having the flag there. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
We'll follow up with staff, and we'll get back to you on that. Okay. Anything else, Councilmember Cutterback?
Nope, that's it.
Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, thank you. Had a wonderful vacation. Traveled all over Yellowstone, Grand Canyon, Arizona, California, Oregon coast. It was a lot of driving, but a lot of good family time. Mm-hmm. I was in Staten, Oregon for the 4th of July.
In what Oregon?
Staten.
Staten.
Small
okay.
town south of Salem. And, of course, for that whole state, anything that goes over like 3 feet is illegal. And so it was probably one of the most lame 4th of July fireworks display I've ever seen in my life. And was reminded of the great memories of Monroe And so I'm looking forward to being back in the Frylands next 4th of July.
AKA Beirut.
Because it was really, really sad. So to echo all the comments, yeah, it's, you know, debatable and people, some people don't like it, but having frequent or having just now experienced a 4th without them, I would much rather have my fireworks. Thank you.
Thank you, Councilmember. Staff, Brad. Paul's gone.
Worked on all the projects in the packets. Work is progressing. As noticed, let me wrap it up. Mm-hmm. Even without a flag.
Awesome.
Hill Street and Blakely Street are progressing nicely. Mm-hmm. They should be paving, hopefully, Blakely on the week of the 21st of July. We hope to get that done so we can get that back opened up. And then they're hoping to be done with it all before the parade.
Nice.
So. Wonderful.
Anybody else have any questions about any public works projects in town?
I have a question.
Oh, Councilmember Kim.
Actually, it's not concerning the public works. Do you have a report on the ham radio event?
Oh, yes.
As I warned you?
I didn't bring that. They emailed me the stuff, but I haven't read it yet.
All right.
So.
Next week.
Okay, next week.
Thank you.
Chief.
Well, I too enjoyed the 4th of July. I parked my overweight vehicle at the fairgrounds parking
lot.
And my family and I sat back and they watched. We had a 360 view of the valley here. It was quite interesting. And we didn't have very many comments in the officer's logs, but there was one that I thought you might be interested in that kind of caught my eye. And it was by one of our more creative writers, and he wrote that the citizens of Monroe are enjoying Independence Day by blowing up and burning down their city, all is well. That's where we're having shifts with officers.
Thank you, Chief. Gene.
I have two things. Thank you, Mayor. First thing, I wanted to thank Officer Jason Southard. He was the speaker at the chamber lunch today and did a magnificent job. He talked about crime prevention and represented the city very well, so I definitely appreciate that. And then it's just a reminder that we have the joint school board city council meeting on July 21st, and we have a couple of people that are RSVP'd, Councilmember Cutterback, Mayor Thomas, Councilmember Hanford, and Councilmember Camp, and Davis. So if anybody else is going to be there, let Liz know, please. And that's all I have.
Okay. A couple things then. First, last week, Una and I both toured Image Mill here in town. They're in the manufacturing park. They make, they do printouts on anything from wood to, well, paper, to plastic and glass and things like that. We here in Monroe, we have Image Mill here in Monroe that actually wrapped the Microsoft buses that you see going around the region. So they do things for Starbucks and other large businesses, other large stores and things like that. One of the reasons why we went to meet with them was looking at the potential of wrapping the smokestack with one of their images, because yes, they do print that large in lieu of painting the smokestack. And where we left things, we may, or rather the chamber may, use them to wrap the base, the bottom 6 to 10 feet of the smokestack with a more detailed image, sort of a film reel of historical events that have happened in Monroe across the base, and Image Mill would do better than perhaps having a paint at that level. So anyway, that was great. Spent about an hour and a half there, and really neat seeing what one of our businesses in our manufacturing park is doing. On the note of manufacturers, we have another manufacturers summit this coming Thursday. The Everett Community College will be doing the majority of that program. The time will be from 1 to 2:30, and as I think I had explained before with the last summit, the main issue that the manufacturers had in our manufacturers park was related to labor. I think I had mentioned to you before that one of the issues they had was something as simple as soft skills. Soft skills like understanding that when you go to work, you're there for 8 hours, and that you might not be texting the whole time when the conveyor belt is moving things past you. But also getting down into the technical skills like welding and other things that I myself am not that familiar with. But because of that, the community college will take lead on facilitating this summit meeting. And we're hopeful that a group will form around this over the next couple meetings, so that just like having the Chamber of Commerce here in town, that we'll have a similar entity, a similar organization that we can go to get feedback on anything from city policies and regulations to a point to check in with for the Monroe School District for internships and apprenticeships, to the community college being able to go and help tailor training programs at the community college to fill some of the needs that our businesses have. So that's this Thursday, and everybody's welcome to come if you'd like to be there. Please let Liz or Jean know so that if we look like we're tipping toward a quorum that we can properly notice the meeting. So Councilmember Cutterback will be there. Anybody else going to know right now that they'll be there? Okay, so if you suddenly think you're going to be there, please contact us tomorrow before noon. That gives us 24 hours, I guess, to notice. Okay. The next item, wakeboard. We have wakeboard this weekend, right? Yep. And so the southbound lanes of Frylands will be closed. And I noticed that they're already out there setting up for that, so I encourage everybody to swing by the event at some point to visit and see how things are going. And then swag, we had a sort of a due date, if you will, of getting orders in for clothing. If you wanted to order anything on your own dime for fleeces or whatever that say City of Monroe on them, so if you could get those in by tomorrow, that'll allow staff to order those and get them before the cooler weather gets in. And when you're in a parade or something, you might want to have something that says City of Monroe. So anyway, is anybody planning on putting in an order that hasn't yet so that we can expect
it? I was, and I completely forgot, so I appreciate it. And I think it was supposed to be today.
It was yesterday.
Oh, was it yesterday?
But I didn't do mine either, so.
Yeah. Well, you're the mayor, so you get a pass.
Well, I figured everybody else should get a pass, too. So if you could just get that into
and
into
checks made out
tomorrow.
To the city.
Yeah, checks made out to the city of Monroe.
No, actually, it's checks made out to Kick It Graphics, which is the entity. However, let me make the caveat that part of the deal with them is that the more you order, the more discount you get. So that's why we try to group these orders all together instead of doing one-offs. So really what would happen is I've given you, you know, kind of the general costs, and then there might be a slight difference or discount depending on how many things are ordered, and then I would give you the final cost, and then you would make the payment. And it's payment on delivery, so we can order it, and then at the time of delivery, we would make the payments. So
if you could get your orders by close of business to Liz tomorrow, that'll allow us to figure out what the cost is, and we can let you know next week. And when delivery comes in, we'll take checks.
Very good.
Okay. Gene, did you have something?
Thank you, Mayor. You mentioned wakeboard competition. I just want to let council know that Brad Smith from H3O should be there. He mentioned that he was going to be there, so if you see him, feel free to say hi and check in on their progress.
Awesome. Nice.
Fun time.
Thank you. And just to echo, we have been checking in with H3O on occasion just to see how things are going. And I know that Gene has sent you out emails from time to time letting you know that we have proactively reached out to find out what their status is. And as we understand it from last communication, they're still looking for a funding partner. They had lost a funding partner earlier this year is what it sounds like. Okay. All right. Lastly, on the issue of fireworks, I will go ahead and forward to you. I only received I received multiple emails from one person expressing concern about fireworks, and over the next day or two, I'll forward that to council members so that you have that. And I think that's all I have. Do we have anything else? Okay. Gene?
Just on that note, that same person that sent the email, I happened to be going through emails today and noticed that they had commented in past years. So we have received several emails from that same individual.
Okay, sounds good. So I'll forward the most recent one then. All right. I have no other items of business on the... Oh, no. We do have the draft agenda and the extended agenda. Gene?
Thank you, Mayor. Draft agenda for July 15, 2014. Under announcements and presentations, Everett Community College will be here. Under public hearing, we have the surplus property public hearing. We have the consent agenda. Under unfinished business, we have agenda bill 14-094 that we moved from this evening. Sign code regulations, first reading. Final action, we have approval of ordinance number 008-2014, adopting permanent sign code regulations. We'll have to see if that's going to stay there or get moved because of the other move, but I will confirm that. And then we have the committee reports, P4, and legislative affairs, and the draft agenda for July 22nd, 2014.
On the extended agenda, if you take a look at that and see if there's anything that you feel you'd like to have on there that isn't on there right now, please let us know. And of importance, please let us know if you anticipate being absent at any of the meetings that are coming up as well. Reminder, August 5th is canceled, and that's canceled because of National Night Out. At this point in time, we don't have a meeting scheduled for July 29th, and we'll watch to see if there's anything that comes up that requires us to consider doing that, but I don't anticipate that right now. That's because it's the 5th. Sorry, Councilmember Hanford.
Yes, I was wondering if we can add something to look at. I was called tonight on my way home from work by a friend that witnessed a near miss at the crosswalk that crosses from the Sockeyes building to the YMCA. And what happens is if you are leaving Lake Ty and heading up towards the foothills, the left lane always gets backed way up, the right lane doesn't. And so the left lane gets to a stop, people on the Sockeyes side start to cross, and it looks clear to them, and they can't see that there's cars coming flying up in the right lane, and it was a near miss. And that when he called me, I recalled how I was driving on the right lane once and had a near miss with someone because of that very issue. So something to think about, like, you know, Redmond has the flashing lights when people cross or something. I know that's more money and something to put on our radar for fixing, because I hate to have someone die in front of the YMCA.
Me too.
Yeah, anywhere, but yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Sure. That's just a bad spot.
Staff will go back and look at that. We'll come in with a couple alternatives that different jurisdictions use and price tags associated with those as well, the cost. Does that sound good? We'll look at that about 3 to 4 weeks out. Does that sound about okay?
I appreciate it. Thanks.
Councilmember Cutterback.
Councilmember Gearing just said I should put the flag on there. So
pick a date for the flag resolution. Absolutely.
I think that can happen. July 22nd looks, is that enough time? July 22nd is pretty light.
What would you like on the flag resolution?
Well, do we have to have a resolution
We can just... I would propose that I go and talk with staff, find out what the cost is, and bring that back to you. If a budget amendment or something is necessary, then we'll go ahead and discuss that.
Okay. But,
I don't have an issue with having a flag there, and I can direct staff.
Already.
Well, I can direct staff to do that.
But it has to be that Brad has to raise it and lower it every night.
That's the resolution part.
Yeah, that's the resolution. I was going to suggest we have the Department of Corrections on for a presentation. It looks like we do. Great. So I don't have to suggest that. Okay.
Yeah, we did send out about 20 letters or so to different entities.
Great.
Inviting them to come and present for the 15 minutes. And so not that we expect all of them in succession, but we do want to make certain that we have members of the community, organizations in the community, have an opportunity to come in and talk about what the food bank is doing, or what the library is doing, or what the community college or the DOC is doing. So.
And was a letter sent to like Rotary or Kiwanis or anything, the service clubs? Because that might be.
We talked about the service clubs, but I don't know that we sent to all of them on this round, because I think the stack got thick.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Any other items? Okay. Seeing none, I'll entertain a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
I have a first from Councilmember Cutterback and a second from Councilmember Hanford. Any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion passes. Thank you very much.